This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The subject is cardiovascular health. And in today's podcast, we're going to focus on some of the nutrients that may be perhaps a little bit overlooked in terms of a program of cardiovascular prevention. With us is one of our favorite contributors. He's Neil Edward Levin. He's the Senior Nutrition Education Manager and a product formulator for Now Foods. Also makers of Protocol for Life Balance products. That's their professional line. Neil is an award-winning board-certified clinical nutritionist, a founder and officer of the American Nutrition Association, a director of the Mid-American Health Organization. There's lots of initials there. It's M-A-H-O, MAHO. And he serves on the International and American Association of Clinical Nutritionists Clinical Nutrition Certification Board, as do I. You're a fellow board member with me on that CNS certification board. So without further ado, let's talk cardiovascular health. How are you doing today, Neil?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Just working from home like most people.
Okay. So how have you worked with a vitamin company. How has your company responded to the crisis? Have there been major shortages? Have there been bottlenecks in production? How have you stayed on top of it?
Well, yes and yes. We're doing our best, but supplies were short on many materials at the beginning, especially, because there was such a demand. And that was at the time when China was shut down, and because of their pandemic, and that was after their new year when they're shut down anyway. And we were actually stockpiled on materials anticipating that, but not anticipating a pandemic,
right,
and increased demand.
Like a black swan event. Nobody saw it coming.
Oh, yeah. So we have probably 10% of our line is out of stock at any one time, which is a lot for us.
Especially in the immune category, I would imagine, things that pertain to immunity.
Sure, things like immune mushrooms, vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, those things are all in short supply because there's a dramatically increased world demand. And remember, some of these are botanicals that are harvested maybe once a year. You know, if you have to wait for the fall harvest and you've just sold out the entire harvest from last fall,
wow,
you got a ways to go until you're getting more elderberry. Maybe they're growing some in southern hemisphere or something where it might be available sooner, but if you're trying to get it around here, you're going to get it in the fall.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, but what you've noticed and I've noticed, I think, is a tremendous surge in interest on behalf of the general public to support our health, because in the face of an implacable epidemic, what's left other than to do the best we can, to eat well, to exercise, do all the requisite things that seem to be helpful for supporting resilience, and that includes taking supplements. And I've seen a tremendous surge. You probably have from your end as well in terms of supplement sales, right?
Yeah, sales are at record levels because people want the supplements. They want to be healthy. They want to cover nutritional gaps. They want to support their immune system, which requires nutrients to operate properly. And when you combine all that, and they're also looking for herbal remedies and botanicals, increasing their antioxidant status, increasing their immune status. And there's so many things going on with that that it's just impossible to keep up. We're running extra shifts and, you know, full capacity trying to get these things out when we do get materials.
With social distancing, which makes it even more challenging because you have to, you know, swab down the surfaces and perhaps stagger shifts so that there's not as much crowding together and people already wear masks in your plant anyway, right?
Well, they do. There's, you know, protective equipment is necessary because we're dealing with powders and liquids that have aromas and things like that that are, it's just personal protective equipment are part of the scene. You know, if you're working in an encapsulation room, you know, there might be two or three people working on there if there's a trainee, but once they're trained and certified, there could be one person working in there, but they're fully garbed. You know, they're wearing
it's a clean room.
Equipment,
respirators.
Like
it's a clean room. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So at any rate, okay, so, you know, it's been a busy couple of months for you. It's not, like you're a restaurant owner. You've been laid off. I imagine you've been busier than ever. So let's focus on today's subject, which is cardiovascular health. You say in an article that you provided to us at drhoffman.com that the cardiovascular system can be divided into three main components. What are those?
Well, cardiovascular is the heart, and there's a circulatory system that goes out from the heart and then comes back, you know, the arteries and the veins. And those are all supported by the lymph system kicks into that and, other systems. Blood cells are made in different organs. So there's a host of different areas of the body that are involved in cardiovascular health, but you know, the best known are the circulatory system and the heart, of course.
And then I think you also include the blood as a component, because the blood is a messenger that brings oxygen to the cells, you know, which is certainly important, and you know, the blood participates in that process. Okay, so how do the three key nutrients that we're going to focus on today fit into that scheme of things?
Well, we've got the nattokinase, which is an enzyme that helps break up what's called fibrin, which is something that holds together clots of blood cells.
And so that works in the blood.
Something we need.
That works, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously, we need that if we get cut or injured, that a clot would form and protect us and seal that injury. But of course, if a clots are forming in the body and inappropriately, let's say someone has arrhythmia or something and the blood isn't circulating properly and a clot can form. Let's say there's a part of the leg that's not getting good circulation and a clot forms. And it's bad enough if it occurs in these areas. But if the clot gets loose and starts traveling through and ends up in the heart or the brain, you can end up with a heart attack or a stroke from clots. That's why people take medications like anticoagulants or blood thinners to try to prevent those, you know, especially if they have pre-existing conditions. But if you don't have a pre-existing condition and you're trying to regulate clotting and make sure clotting is normal, enzymes like nattokinase are ways the body can maintain normal circulation and clotting factors and prevent excessive levels of clotting, keep it within the healthy range.
We have a lot of pharmaceutical solutions for this. I mean, this is a big part of the pharmaceutical industry. We have Eliquis as a substitute for Coumadin. You know, some people don't like Coumadin because Coumadin you have to keep getting checked for levels, and with drugs like Eliquis, you don't have to do that. Xarelto is another of these new drugs. Of course, there's old-fashioned aspirin as a blood thinner. And so why might someone consider taking natokinase? Is it an either or is it a add-on or something that may support the benefits of some of these other prescription or over-the-counter anticoagulants?
Well, those medications are fairly specialized, and they work in different ways, as you well know. The natokinase is not a drug, so it's not going to force an effect. It's simply going to help break up these fibrin clusters that are precursors of clots forming.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to have a clot forming because you don't have proper circulation or something, a lot of people have poor circulation, they're not necessarily on blood thinners, that would be a good indication that you might want to look at something like mm-hmm. natokinase. Always discuss it with your physician, of mm-hmm. course, so they know what you're taking.
Mm-hmm.
There could be potential interactions with different things.
Right.
But, and certainly if you're taking something that's an anticoagulant, a blood thinner, and you take another blood thinner, you don't want to overdo it because that's not good either if you cut yourself and mm-hmm. you can't stop bleeding.
Or especially if you fall and hit your head. I mean, that's actually, let's face it, when you watch TV, there's continuously ads for, if you take one of these powerful prescription blood thinners and you've had an episode of, dangerous bleeding, call 1-800-SUE-THE-BASTARDS. You know, it's a constant litany on TV. So you have to be careful. You have to be careful with blood thinners, prescription or otherwise. Let me tell you what I generally suggest to patients. If they have a dangerous condition like atrial fibrillation and they want to take an alternative to Coumadin or one of these newer blood thinners like Eliquis or even, a prescription dose of aspirin, I tell them, look, atrial fibrillation is a very serious problem and you could flip a blood clot to your brain. And so don't forgo your doctor's advice to take a prescription blood thinner, but also consider taking ancillary things to help you improve your circulation. You know, it doesn't preclude taking some of the things that do not thin blood excessively. Natokinase alone, if you take natokinase, is there a danger that you could have a severe bleeding episode? I consider it pretty mild, right?
No, that would be considered mild. It probably not even be as strong as aspirin, something like
mm-hmm.
that. But,
mm-hmm.
It is something to consider if there's, let's say you have a risk factor and you're not necessarily wanting to go on the medications for various reasons. The Coumadin, you got to check the blood levels. You got to watch variations in the diet.
Mm-hmm.
Things that contain vitamin K can
right.
increase.
That's a nuisance. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It can neutralize the Coumadin.
You can't have a big salad one day and no mm-hmm. salad the next day, and then you have some coleslaw 3 days later. You know, that just throws you off.
Mm-hmm.
For the newer ones, like the Xarelto, which I'm personally on, because mm-hmm. I've had a history of arrhythmia,
mm-hmm.
it just assures me that if there is an arrhythmia, that I would be protected, that mm-hmm. it would not immediately form a clot and, endanger my life. So, I'm taking it prophylactically based on a history of arrhythmia, not that I constantly have arrhythmia, but I've had incidents over maybe 15, 20 years
right.
where it's a concern.
So it's a perfect example. I mean, I don't know anyone who is better steeped in knowledge about nutritional supplements, and yet you're being prudent about your own medical condition because of the potential severity of a blood clot that is not properly controlled. I mean, you could take, lots of fish oil, and yeah, that's a bit of a blood thinner, but, for a margin of safety, you're taking the medication. So, I would agree with that approach. Natokinase, the word is resonant of a food, which is natto. And, it's interesting that I was once interviewed. This is a really weird thing. I had a film crew come over from Japan to interview me in the 1980s. They told me that she was the Barbara Walters of Japan. She was about 4'8". She was like a very miniature Barbara Walters, and a very popular talk show host in Japan. She interviewed me about NATO because apparently they felt it lent credibility to their widespread use of natto as a food product. They were trying to sell its health benefits and its cardiovascular benefits way back when, in the 1980s. It's been recognized that natto had some mojo versus cardiovascular disease. Is that is nattokinase derived from natto? I presume so, right?
Yes, natto is a thick black fermented soybean paste. It's a condiment that they use in Japan. You know, it has a lot of flavor. It's kind of like you would use soy sauce or something because it enhances flavor. It's because of the components. You have similar components in natto kinase or in natto itself, which is a fermented food.
I've had it. And it's an acquired taste for sure.
It is. To a Westerner who's not used to those strong flavors, it doesn't taste that good.
Yeah, but, I like it.
If you're used to it culturally, it's fine.
Yeah.
And so natto contains both natto kinase, an enzyme that helps regulate the clotting, and it contains vitamin K and an unusual form of vitamin K called MK7, which is a form of vitamin K2. And people might be familiar with the vitamin K in multiple vitamins, which is primarily vitamin K1. And vitamin K1 represents about 90% of the vitamin K in our diets and is predominantly from green vegetables and grains and things like
that's
that.
That's K1, right?
And that's K1.
Right.
K2, you tend to get in fermented foods, eating cheese, for example. Or even fermented meats might have it, you know, the sausages or things where they're adding different ingredients. But fermenting is what converts the K1 into K2, and about 10% of our dietary vitamin K is in the form of vitamin K2. Now, the active form of vitamin K2 tends to be MK4, not MK7, but MK7 is dramatically better absorbed. It tends to circulate and not stay in the liver, so it has less influence on clotting factors than K1. And
which is good because
people don't realize.
Which is good in a way because vitamin K actually has the opposite effect of nattokinase. It is a pro-clotting thing, and for some people who are on Coumadin, it could possibly diminish the efficacy of the Coumadin. In my opinion, you could take vitamin K till the cows come home. It's not going to clot your blood, but in one specific instance, if you're taking Coumadin, that's the interference potential. That's why they say don't have a lot of green leafy vegetables. You know, if you're taking Coumadin, don't have massive amounts, right?
Yeah, what I've read on that in some of the studies is interesting because it's not quite that clear because what the literature says and the medical literature says. You need to have your vitamin K. You don't want it to be deficient in an essential vitamin. So, but if you're on Coumadin, the Coumadin is not going to work properly if you're deficient in vitamin K, and it's not going to work properly if you change your vitamin K levels dramatically from day to day. Let's say you get 300 or 400 micrograms of vitamin K from eating a lot of salads or something one day, and you get 40 or 50 micrograms another day.
Right.
But the Coumadin can't handle that. It needs to be calibrated with the vitamin K level.
But, you know, one thing, and this is my bête noire, something that I've been fighting for literally for decades, is the recommendation that used to be made, to a lesser extent now, by hospital dietitians to tell patients who have cardiovascular disease, they give them a list of the things that contain vitamin K, and they say, don't consume any of these things because you're on Coumadin. But what my feeling is, and I think you might chime in, is that they're depriving themselves of an essential nutrient that could prevent cardiovascular disease. So it's like double trouble.
Yeah, and from what I've seen, the Coumadin doesn't work properly if you don't have enough vitamin K,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't work properly if you have too much vitamin K. You have to have that Goldilocks zone, that mm-hmm. sweet spot,
mm-hmm.
for it to work properly, and depriving you of vitamin K is not good, and having erratic levels isn't good mm-hmm. for that particular drug.
Because one day you might be protected, and another day you might be not protected, and it just kind of bounces around. So that's and it might be missed at the time of your blood test, because that only picks up a one moment in time. So could you explain, you know, I hope that we have health professionals listening, because this message has not been imparted to health professionals. You, for example, your concern is to thin your blood. So you are taking a medication to thin your blood. And yet, I presume you're an advocate of taking MK7. You take that as a preventive nutrient, right?
I actually take 200 micrograms a day of vitamin K as MK7,
mm-hmm.
plus what's in my multivitamin, which is a combination of K1 and K2.
Okay, so a lot of people who don't have a sophisticated understanding of this is, okay, what's this guy doing? On the one hand, he's thinning his blood with a medication. And the other hand, he's taking vitamin K. And we learned in medical school that vitamin K helps to promote clotting. You know, if you have a deficiency of vitamin K, your blood, you know, runs like water. You'll hemorrhage, right? So how do you reconcile those two situations?
Well, we're seeing a lot less influence on clotting of vitamin K2 versus vitamin K1.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the main functional difference. Vitamin K1 tends to go to the liver and be used to make clotting factors, is mm-hmm. its primary function.
Mm-hmm.
Vitamin K2, its primary function is to circulate in the bloodstream and to scavenge calcium and help bring calcium into cells and tissues where it can be used.
Mm-hmm.
Because vitamin D helps you absorb calcium, but it doesn't move it out of the bloodstream mm-hmm. into the places where we actually utilize it. So you need the other part of it. You need the vitamin K to mm-hmm. do that other part. And the type of vitamin K that's moving calcium is vitamin K2.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that's important is calcium deposits are not something you want in your bloodstream. It's a secondary effect of plaque formation and, mm-hmm. and clotting of the arteries, clogging of the arteries, thickening of the arteries. And you know, it's something that will happen. You know, you need the arteries to be loose. When the heart pumps, the arteries close to the heart have to actually flex and let that pulse of blood mm-hmm. through. There's a constant.
And if they're chock full of calcium, that stiffens the arterial walls, and you know, also provides a docking place for fibrin clots, so-called vulnerable plaque, you know, which is composed of calcium and other components. The way I explain it is that vitamin K, from what I understand, is kind of a one-way street. Absence of vitamin K and you bleed to death. And this actually happens sometimes in hospitalized patients who take a lot of antibiotics and are in very poor diets. They get no vitamin K dietarily. They kill off their flora because certain bacteria produce vitamin K. And then they hemorrhage because they're vitamin K deficient. This is a known phenomenon in hospitals. Then they get an injection of vitamin K to solve that. But giving them vitamin K just normalizes clotting, but doesn't give you excessive clotting. That's my clinical understanding. So it's, unless you're taking Coumadin, there you have to be a little careful about your vitamin K intake. Is that a fair summation?
Yeah, the level of vitamin K that's considered safe is, you know, it has to do with body weight, but if you're a 70 kilogram, roughly 150 pound adult, then you can do up to 400 or 500 micrograms a day
mm-hmm.
is considered safe, for just about everybody. There's no evidence it's going to be unsafe unless you have that medication interaction.
Right.
On the other hand.
Specifically for Coumadin.
Yeah.
Right.
On the other hand, you know, people tend not to get so much vitamin K. Vitamin K you would get, you know, eating grains, eating greens. And how many people are eating salads, are eating whole grains and getting those kind of nutrients, mm-hmm. or taking a multivitamin to supplement those, which is a good way to bridge nutritional gaps if you're on restricted diet. You know, if you don't eat a lot of salads and greens and things, where are you getting your vitamin K? If you're not eating whole grains, where are you getting your vitamin K? It's got to be from supplements, if not from food.
Good point at which to pause, because I want to continue our discussion of vitamin K, because that's an important subject. I think vitamin K is one of the most exciting nutrients on the scene. It's only been popularized, what would you say, the last maybe 5 or 8 years. But I think a lot of people, when they think cardiovascular protection, you know, they're going to think of the traditional things, you know, coenzyme Q10. We'll talk a little bit about ubiquinol in part two. They certainly talk about fish oil and magnesium. You know, these are important. But vitamin K really has some very exciting potential in terms of preventing cardiovascular disease. Plus, another application, which we'll discuss in part two, has to do with your bones. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today, we're talking to Neil Levin. He's Senior Nutrition Education Manager and Product Formulator for Now Foods. Also, the physician line of that company is Protocol for Life Balance. Those products available to you at drhoffman.com, protocol/Protocol for Life Balance. And we'll be right back in just a moment with Intelligent Medicine.